Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, July 1st, 2020. Coming up this hour,
Dr. Anthony Fauci warns of coronavirus infections doubling in coming weeks.
California, Colorado, and Florida join the list of states rolling back reopening plans due to the outbreak.
And in Hong Kong, authorities make the first round of arrests under China's new national security law.
The strongest plea yet from administration officials to wear masks. The tri-state area has doubled its out-of-state visitor quarantine list. I'm Amy Morris. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. We'll hear from Yankees general manager Brian Cashman, and the NBA says the league could revisit its plan to resume the season.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Interactive Brokers Mutual Fund Marketplace. Clients from over 200 countries and territories have access to over 21,000 no-load and 8,300 no-transaction fee funds. Learn more at ibkr.com/funds.
And U.S. futures are lower this morning to kick off the first day of the third quarter. It is 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 10 points. Dow futures down 109. NASDAQ futures down 29. The DAX in Germany is down 0.4%. CAC in Paris down 0.9%. And the FTSE 100 down 0.8%. 10-year Treasury down 0.3%. Yield 0.68%. The yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.7% up $1.06 at $40.33 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.2% or $4 to $1,804.50 an ounce. The euro 1.1206 against the dollar. The yen 107.54. Nathan.
Well, Karen, we begin with a dire warning from Dr. Anthony Fauci. The nation's top infectious disease expert tells Congress daily coronavirus infections could more than double in coming weeks.
We are now having 40-plus thousand new cases a day. I would not be surprised if we go up to 100,000 a day if this does not turn around, and so I am very concerned.
Fauci points to indoor gatherings and bars for the surge in cases and urges all Americans to wear masks.
We've got to get that message out that we are all in this together, and if we are going to contain this, we've got to contain it together.
Hospitalizations are increasing in 12 states, and the latest count has daily cases up 1.9%. That is above last week's average and approaching twice the level seen just 1 month ago. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with more. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nathan. In Florida, Miami-Dade County is reporting its highest number of hospitalizations in nearly 2 months. The state has banned consumption of alcohol in bars, but Governor Ron DeSantis has no plans for additional measures.
We're not going back, closing things. I don't think that really is what's driving it. I mean, people going to business is not what's driving it. I think when you see the younger folks, I think a lot of it is more just social interactions.
Cases in Colorado have been rising since the state reopened bars, and that has Governor Jared Polis reversing course and suspending indoor service.
Our country and the world has not yet figured out in a pandemic how to do bars and nightclubs safely. We just haven't.
So far, Goldman Sachs estimates that more than 40% of the country has reversed or halted economic reopenings. I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. In California, the state is reporting a record number of hospitalizations and the second biggest daily jump in cases. And here with more is Ed Baxter from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Governor Gavin Newsom says people have just rushed out and ignored separation and mask mandates. He says he's being forced to start enforcing mask guidance.
The framework for us is this. If you're not going to stay home and you're not going to wear masks in public, we have to enforce, and we will, and we'll be making announcements on enforcement.
He says he is also very worried about behavior over the 4th of July weekend. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Ed. As infections surge in several states, the European Union is extending its travel ban for U.S. residents. Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo has more from Brussels.
What the Europeans are saying is that this is really about not importing cases into the European Union, and at this point, the U.S. does not meet the criteria. The caveat here, of course, is that if you're a European citizen living anywhere, you can come back at any time, of course, because you're a European citizen, and the list will be updated every 2 weeks, which means that what's set in though now may not apply by July 15th.
The EU is loosening travel restrictions for Australia, Canada, and Japan, but says the U.S. response to the pandemic is insufficient to allow Americans into the bloc.
Meantime, on Capitol Hill, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell is voicing concern about the surge in cases.
Hypothetically, a second outbreak could, force governments and force people to withdraw again from economic activity. And I think the worst part of it would be to undermine public confidence, which is what we need to get back to lots of kinds of economic activity that involve crowds.
Powell notes the economic recovery is moving faster than expected, but it also is presenting new challenges, most notably the need to keep the virus in check.
All right, let's switch gears now to go halfway around the world, where authorities in Hong Kong have made their first arrests under China's new controversial national security law. Here with the very latest is Bloomberg's Karen Lee in Hong Kong.
Less than 24 hours after the law was officially enacted on the city by China, they arrested a man holding a Hong Kong independence flag, and he was one of a few dozen protesters out in the central Causeway Bay district. They were met by a phalanx of riot police holding new purple warning flags that say they might be in violation of the law.
And let's go right to that central Causeway Bay district where we find Bloomberg's Sophie Kamarudin, and she brings us the very latest now from the streets of Hong Kong.
Now, it has been largely peaceful with few bouts of commotion as the police have taken measures to disperse crowds and prevent big groups from forming. They're using tactics like setting up cordons and barricades to limit the smooth movement of people. People have been arrested for offenses including illegal assembly, violation of the security law, obstructing police officers, and possessing weapons. 10 members of the pro-democracy People Power Party were among those arrested, and we have protest slogans being chanted as people are marching on the street here on July 1st, the anniversary of the handover of Hong Kong to China.
The new national security law carries a potential life sentence for those convicted, and it applies to actions committed by anyone, whether or not they're Hong Kong residents. We're going to have more on the unrest in the city coming up throughout the morning right here on Bloomberg Radio. Ahead of that, Wall Street futures are moving lower. S&P futures down 8 points. Dow futures down 96. NASDAQ futures giving back 19 points. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And at 6:07 on Wall Street, let's turn to Amy Morris for more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Nathan. As you've been reporting, coronavirus cases are surging nationwide. New appeals now from the administration for everyone to wear masks. Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams.
If you all will commit to wearing these face coverings and taking basic public health precautions, as the nation's doctor, as America's doctor, I want you to know I have every confidence that we can very quickly see these new case counts go down.
Health officials in New York are also investigating a potential coronavirus pocket at a small church in an upstate community. Governor Andrew Cuomo says one person who contracted the virus in Florida attended a service at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Ticonderoga on June 21st. The state is providing testing for anyone who attended that service. Meanwhile, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut have expanded their quarantine list to include 16 states. This as Governor Cuomo says the capital region is cleared to begin phase four of reopening starting today, including low-risk outdoor and indoor arts and entertainment, media production, and higher education services. Connecticut's coronavirus rate has reached an all-time low. Governor Ned Lamont says only 152 tests came back positive between Sunday and Monday. Those are the lowest numbers they've seen so far. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio's office says the city is on pace to reopen 15 of the city's 53 public outdoor swimming pools on August 1st. In addition, the mayor and the city council have agreed to an $88.1 billion budget on the final day of the city's fiscal year, including cutting police spending by $1 billion. In New Jersey, Governor Phil Murphy has signed a $7.62 million stopgap spending bill for a fifth quarter with the current fiscal year to help the state navigate a projected $10 billion shortfall. The plan cut about $2 billion in spending that was planned before the pandemic. President Trump says he will veto the entire defense spending bill if it contains a provision that would remove names of Confederate officers from military bases. The Warren Amendment was included in the measure that was approved by the Republican-led Senate Armed Services Committee. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy, thank you. It is 6:09 on Wall Street and time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. With the virus spiking, is NBA Commissioner Adam Silver having second thoughts about resuming the season? We're just a week away from 22 teams reporting to Orlando and a hotspot state, but Silver said It's never been full speed ahead, that they could revisit their plans, and that if they get a lot of cases, they'll stop playing. The NHL might have the right idea. Go to Canada. There are reports the league is considering having all its playoff games in Toronto and Edmonton. Baseball players start showing up today. Before the workouts come the tests for COVID. Actual workouts likely to start Friday. Yankees general manager Brian Cashman hopeful that players having gone so long without playing doesn't lead to injuries.
Aaron Boone and our staff are going to try to, you know, get as close as they possibly can to simulate some game actions over the course of this three-week period, and that's going to, you know, put a stress on all aspects of the body. It's obviously designed to get them ready, but it also exposed those who might not be ready.
Cashman on the Yes Network also updated Yankee injuries, said he's hopeful Aaron Judge's rib allows him to play the opener, that Aaron Hicks is a possibility back from Tommy John surgery. James Paxton has resolved his bad back, and Giancarlo Stanton, who hurt his calf, may stick to being a DH. And what was not a well-kept secret, minor league baseball has been canceled. Although most of the players will get paid, hundreds who make a living working for minor league teams will not. There's a push by those who have won MVP awards to stop using the name Kennesaw Mountain Landis in connection with the award. He was the longtime commissioner who many say was not a proponent of letting black players into the game, and yet his name and face is on the MVP award. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. In other sports news, the Mets are cutting staff off the field. The New York Post is reporting the club laid off 25 employees last week. Most worked in business operations. The paper also says the Mets have instituted pay cuts for their entire staff. Futures moving lower as we head into the first day of the second half of 2020. S&P futures are down almost 5 points now. Dow futures down 63. NASDAQ futures lower by 9 points. So giving back some earlier losses. The 10-year is down 8/32, yield 0.68%. And a 2-year treasury yield 0.15%. Stay with us. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, turning partly sunny today. Could see a few showers or thunderstorms as we head up to near 80 degrees. Partly cloudy, upper 60s tonight, upper 80s tomorrow under a mix of sun and clouds. 69 degrees in New York.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures moving lower this morning in a muted start to the third quarter as investors mull downbeat economic data and fresh warnings about the spread of the coronavirus. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 5 points. Dow futures down 75. NASDAQ futures down 15. The DAX in Germany is down 0.4%. 10-year Treasury down 8/32, yield 0.68%. The yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.9%, up $1.15 to $40.42 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2%, or $2.90, at $18.03.30 an ounce. The euro, 1.1211 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2415, and the yen, 107.52. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy.
Karen, lawmakers got an earful yesterday about where the coronavirus may be headed now in the U.S. Details in this live report from Bloomberg's John Tucker.
And Amy, the nation's top infectious disease expert, Anthony Fauci, tells Congress new cases of COVID-19 could more than double to 100,000 a day. Meantime, Miami-Dade County in Florida reporting its highest number of hospitalizations in nearly 2 months. Republican Governor Ron DeSantis again rolled out new restrictions to curb the spread of the virus. In California, the state is reporting a record number of hospitalizations and the second biggest daily jump in cases. Economic reopens, meantime, have been stopped or reversed in 40% of the country. That's according to Goldman Sachs. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thank you, John. And in other news, the Trump administration is arranging a closed-door briefing today with intelligence officials for the so-called Gang of Eight House and Senate leaders. This is regarding reports that Russian operatives in Afghanistan offered bounties to kill American troops. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Amy. It's 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And as the coronavirus continues to surge to the south and Dr. Fauci gives those new warnings, let's bring in Andy Pecco. She's a professor of molecular microbiology and immunology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Good, as always, to talk with you, Professor. It seems as though the U.S. in many ways has been a step or two behind this virus over the last few months. What is it going to take to get ahead of it?
Yeah, you know, there are strategies that have been shown to work in terms of controlling these cases. You have to get the case numbers down through these public health interventions and things like stay at home and those types of things. But then you can relieve those drastic public health measures by putting in place testing, physical distancing, and contact tracing to keep track of the lower number of cases that are then going to occur with this virus. If you just let go all of the public health interventions that kept this virus down for so long, you're seeing what's going to happen. The cases just bounce back, and the virus makes its way through the population very, very easily.
Well, that raises the big question. Did we ease those restrictions too soon?
I think some of the states that you're seeing these surges in, the answer has to be yes. There are two reasons for that. One is these states either did not let those numbers get low enough for them to then effectively put in their contact tracing, or their contact tracing mechanisms are just not in place at a high enough level to be able to keep track of the cases that are occurring. Both of those problems are solvable. It just takes an effort at the level of the state and local governments to really address that problem.
Does it make it more difficult to solve those problems if they did do the reopening too soon and allowed the virus to resurge in the way that we're starting to see now, particularly in Texas, Arizona, Florida, places like that?
Absolutely. Contact tracing is a labor-intensive task. So the fewer cases you have to contract trace, the better you'll be at finding them and doing that effectively. 5% positivity testing is the number the CDC uses as a guide to when you can start to safely relieve some of these public health interventions. Many of the states across the South were nowhere close to that when they started to relieve their public health interventions.
Now we're starting to hear more forcefully, particularly from the Surgeon General, about wearing masks. He said, please, please, please wear masks. So they're really putting that message out there. Dr. Fauci warned that we could see 100,000 infections a day without further social distancing and masking. What effect could we see on the numbers if we were to start to see more broad-based acceptance of social distancing and masking?
Well, you know, it's clear that social distancing, wearing masks, and avoiding crowded places are ways that we can definitely keep down the number of cases. We see that with where it's been effectively put in place for COVID-19. We also see it with other respiratory viruses that have pretty much gone away because of these public health interventions that we've put in place. Now, there's a way to do that along with opening up the economy, and it's that balance that people have to realize. There is a personal responsibility for people to maintain some of these public health interventions like wearing masks and avoiding crowded places. That's going to help us open up the economy and get back to some semblance of a normal life.
How do you strike the balance, though? I wonder whether we're going to just have to continue with some sort of social distancing and masking until we get effective therapeutics and until we get a vaccine. I mean, is that the kind of reality that people are going to have to deal with here, that we're just going to have to generally avoid big crowds for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be able to do some of the things we did pre-December, but things are going to be done in a different way. Personal example, you know, my family and I went out for dinner for Father's Day. We did it at a restaurant that had outdoor seating, that was spaced out tables, and followed all of those public health interventions. So we were able to go out and have a meal and celebrate, but still maintain some level of safety from COVID-19.
And just quickly, about 30 seconds left here, will quarantine orders in states that have put them in place, like New York, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, be effective?
They are, but they're the drastic effects that we were hoping to avoid by damping down the numbers and keeping these other public health interventions in place. They will work. Again, they're the drastic ways. They're the ways that we don't want to have put in place for long periods of time, because they really do put an undue stress on individuals as well as our society.
Andy Pekosh, always good getting your insights, your expertise on these matters. Thank you so much. Andy Pekosh is professor of molecular microbiology and immunology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And as always, you can get the very latest on the pandemic, Bloomberg.com/coronavirus or VRUS Go on the Bloomberg terminal for the latest news and resources about COVID-19. S&P futures lower by 7.5 points. Dow futures down 97. And it is 6:25 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at nria.net.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are lower this morning to kick off the third quarter as investors watch coronavirus cases surge in several states. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the very latest. John, good morning.
And Karen, hospitalizations are increasing in 12 of those states. In Florida, Miami-Dade County reporting its highest number of hospitalizations in 2 months. The state banning consumption of alcohol in bars, but Governor Ron DeSantis has no plans for additional measures. The cases in Colorado, meantime, since the state reopened bars, have been rising since the state reopened bars. And so far, Goldman Sachs estimates more than 40% of the country has reversed or halted economic reopenings. I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thanks. As infections surge in several states, the European Union is extending its travel ban for U.S. residents. Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo has more from Brussels.
This is really about not importing cases into the European Union. And at this point, the U.S. does not meet the criteria. The caveat here, of course, is that the list will be updated every 2 weeks, which means that what's set in stone now may not apply by July 15th.
The EU says the U.S. response to the pandemic is insufficient to allow Americans into the bloc for non-essential reasons.
Meantime, in Hong Kong, China's new national security law has taken effect, and Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis brings us the very latest.
The new law carries a potential life sentence for those convicted. It extends to actions by anyone, whether or not they are Hong Kong residents, and it would ensnare even people committing nonviolent actions. Opposition lawmakers say it will cast a chilling effect over civil liberties. And top activists resign from their parties, some of those parties disbanded. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. And already authorities in Hong Kong have made their first arrests under the new law. Bloomberg's Karen Lee has more from the city.
They arrested a man holding a Hong Kong independence flag, and he was one of a few dozen protesters out in the central Causeway Bay district. They were met by a phalanx of riot police holding new purple warning flags that say they might be in violation of the law.
More than 180 arrests have been made in connection to demonstrations in Hong Kong today. At least seven of those are tied to the new national security law.
And S&P futures are down 7 points this morning. Dow futures down 90. NASDAQ futures down 13. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.6%, up $1.02 at $40.29 a barrel. The euro 1.1210 against the dollar. British pound 1.2416. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. To 6:33 on Wall Street. Let's get more now on the government's response to the surge in coronavirus cases in this country. Here's Bloomberg's Amy Morris. Amy.
Well, Nathan, this is the strongest appeal yet that we've heard from the administration for the public to wear masks. Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams is asking the public to, quote, please, please, please wear a mask. Vice President Mike Pence also asking people to follow those guidelines.
Wash your hands. Practice good hygiene. And wear a mask. Wear a mask whenever your state and local authorities say it's appropriate. Or it's always a good idea to wear a mask when social distancing is not possible.
Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar also appealing to the public to wear masks. New York State health officials investigating a potential coronavirus hotspot. It's at a church in upstate New York. Someone who contracted the virus in Florida attended service at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Ticonderoga on June 21st. Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state will provide testing for anyone who attended that service. This as 16 states are now on the quarantine list for New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Visitors would have to quarantine for 2 weeks upon arrival. But the numbers are going down in New York, so Governor Cuomo says the capital region is cleared to begin phase four of reopening starting today. That includes low-risk outdoor and indoor arts and entertainment, media production, and higher education services. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and the City Council have agreed to an $88.1 billion budget on the final day of the city's fiscal year, including cutting police spending by $1 billion. This, as the mayor's office says, the city is also on pace to reopen 15 of the city's 53 public outdoor swimming pools on August 1st. Connecticut's coronavirus rate has reached an all-time low. Governor Ned Lamont says only 152 tests came back positive between Sunday and Monday. Those are the lowest numbers they've seen so far. The governor says residents need to keep their guard up and do not take those numbers for granted. And in a tweet just before midnight, President Trump threatened to veto the entire defense spending bill if it contains a provision that would remove names of Confederate soldiers from U.S. military bases. The Warren Amendment was included in the measure that was approved by the Republican-led Senate Armed Services Committee. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Amy. 6:35 on Wall Street. John Stashower has the Bloomberg Sports Update.
All right, thanks, Nathan. July 1st, the date for the restart of spring training. Until recently, the Mets and Yankees thought they'd be going to Florida. Instead, they're in New York, and the first order of business today, everyone gets tested. Yankees general manager Brian Cashman said on the Yes Network, the team has so far been lucky.
We've experienced, every walk of life positive COVID test. But thankfully, from that, we really only had, when it was back in spring training, we really only had one employee, for instance, one employee that really was struggling for a good 10 days with it and needed some hospitalization. That was back in March.
First actual workout will be Friday or Saturday. The NHL still has not announced where its playoff games will be held. Five cities vying for two spots with so many virus cases in the U.S. Some say the NHL will stick with Toronto and Edmonton. The NBA, we know, is headed to Orlando next week, but Commissioner Adam Silver admits if there are too many cases, they'll stop playing. Three New Orleans Pelicans players just tested positive, and the Denver Nuggets closed their facility. A lot of local and national broadcasters in all sports will be doing games from the studio rather than the site, but the NBA says its announcers will be at the games, and that has caused 79-year-old Marv Albert, who's been calling NBA games for 57 years, to not take part. The NBA also says the games will be on a delay so they can edit out players and coaches using bad language. Cam Newton's going to New England. Could Odell Beckham be following? The two have been working out together, and Beckham's 2019 season in Cleveland did not go well. But the former Giant says he wants to stay with the Browns, and the Pats got Newton on the cheap. Beckham makes $18 million a year. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. 6:37 on Wall Street. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Hong Kong is marking 23 years since the end of British rule, with a new national security law from China that could put the city's autonomy at risk. And already that law is being put into effect with a number of arrests this morning. Bloomberg's Sophie Kamarudin is on the streets of Hong Kong with the very latest. All right, Sophie, so what do we know about these arrests so far?
Of the arrests that have been made, two have been linked to the new security bill. The individuals, they were holding posters and flags that displayed the saying Hong Kong independence, so that puts them under the scrutiny of this new bill. Police have also made other arrests related to other offenses, such as illegal assembly so far. And given the activity we've seen throughout parts of the city, there's heavy police presence, and there are people on the streets who are not wearing the usual all-black garb that we've come to see for Hong Kong protesters here. They look like they're enjoying their public holiday. People are out shopping, going to restaurants, but they are milling on the streets, trying to find some kind of solidarity, if you will. But the police have managed to put up cordons in strategic areas around the city to dispel crowds from gathering. But still, people are out and about, and it is largely peaceful here in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong police are now saying seven people have been arrested under the security law, and more than 180 in all in today's protest. So it doesn't seem as though this new national security law is quelling the demonstrations, at least not at this point.
For those who have been arrested, what we have seen and observed through footage or observing a few streets away, people are impassioned when it comes to their positions and feelings on the national security bill that was passed not even 24 hours ago. There is a lot of uncertainty as to the reach of the bill, who will actually fall under its provisions. Currently, the details are that four offenses can be punished, namely terrorism, subversion of state power, secession, and collusion with foreign forces. And the maximum penalty for the most severe of those cases would be for life imprisonment. One of the big worries leading into this decision was whether a death penalty would be introduced. That was not the case. And retroactive application will not be applied as well. But as we've noted, we are seeing a pickup in arrests today, more than 180 being arrested. So going into the evening here in Hong Kong, it's unlikely we'll see the activity die down.
That's Bloomberg's Sophie Kamerun reporting from the site of the demonstrations in Hong Kong's Central Causeway Bay District. All right, Sophie, thank you. Now, another story we're following in the corporate world. Shares of FedEx are up more than 10% in early trading. The company reported better than estimated earnings after launching an efficiency drive aimed at home deliveries. Here with more is Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
FedEx declined to provide a financial forecast amid the economic uncertainty from the pandemic, but CEO Fred Smith sounded an upbeat note saying, quote, as a result of the strategic investments we've made to enhance our capabilities and efficiencies, FedEx is well positioned to support and benefit from the reopening of the global economy. FedEx Express picked up volume from the government and companies airlifting personal protective equipment and other essential goods to combat the worldwide COVID-19 pandemic. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Futures are moving lower this morning. This is Bloomberg. And tune in for an interview with John Bolton later this morning. The former National Security Advisor discusses his new book and his time at the White House on Bloomberg surveillance, coming up at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Cameron Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are moving lower in a muted start to the third quarter as investors mull downbeat economic data and fresh warnings about the spread of the coronavirus. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 14 points. Dow futures down 156. NASDAQ futures down 27. The DAX in Germany is down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 9/32nd. Yield 0.68%. Yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is up 2.25% or 87 cents at $40.15 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.4% or $7.40 at $17.93 an ounce. The euro 1.1205 against the dollar. British pound 1.2409 and the yen 107.54. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy.
Karen, health experts paint a grim picture for lawmakers about the future of the coronavirus in the U.S. Bloomberg's John Tucker joining us now live with details. John.
And Amy, the nation's top infectious disease expert, Anthony Fauci, tells Congress new cases of COVID-19 could more than double to 100,000 a day. Meantime, Miami-Dade County in Florida is reporting its highest number of hospitalizations in nearly 2 months. Republican Governor Ron DeSantis again ruled out new restrictions to curb the spread of the virus. In California, that state is reporting a record number of hospitalizations and the second biggest daily jump in cases. Economic reopenings have been stopped or reversed in 40% of the country. That's according to Goldman Sachs. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thank you, John. And in other news, almost 90% of Americans say they are dissatisfied with the state of the country. A new Pew Research Center study shows voters' unhappiness will be reflected in their political decisions going into the presidential election. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy, thanks. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it's 6:49 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the Surgeon General urging Americans to, in his words, please, please, please wear a mask as the coronavirus surges. The Senate passes an extension of the Paycheck Protection Program that was due to expire last night. And President Trump is threatening to veto the entire defense bill if it includes a provision on Confederate names of military bases. Also making news, the Congressional Gang of Eight is about to get a briefing on Russian bounties for U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. Let's get the very latest now from Bloomberg News politics editor Kathleen Hunter. The White House had given a couple of briefings, first to House Democrats, then or first to House Republicans, then to House Democrats. What are we expecting to come out of this meeting with the top leadership of the Congress, Kate?
Well, I think from the Trump administration's perspective, from the White House's perspective, what they're hoping is that this meeting today will help to more or less put this issue to rest or at least alleviate some of the concerns that have been expressed, particularly by Republicans, about, you know, what Trump knew, when he knew it, about these allegations related to bounties that were paid by the Russian government to the Taliban for, you know, the killing of U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. And I think that, you know, the big question is whether this is effective in clearing up some of those questions or whether, you know, we're still going to hear calls from Republicans after today for additional information.
Well, what's the expectation? I mean, we heard from the House Majority Leader, Steny Hoyer, yesterday calling for a full briefing of the entire Congress on this. Does this have a potential of snowballing?
I think it definitely does. And I think that, you know, it's important to remember, kind of to draw some distinctions here between the Democrats and the Republicans. I think the Trump administration is going to be less, the White House is going to be less responsive to, you know, calls from Democrats than they will be from even moderate levels of concern that are expressed by Republicans. I think this is an issue that for Democrats has the potential to further energize their base because it's, you know, tied back into questions about the 2016 election and Trump's posture towards Russia. And whether, you know, these allegations that Trump is, you know, too friendly to Russia, I think those are issues that resonate with the Democratic base. So I think it's not surprising that Democrats will continue to push this issue and bring it to the forefront. I don't know that it's necessarily an issue, though, that resonates on the Democratic side beyond the base all that much, unless we start hearing Republicans making it an issue as well. And so I think that's really the crucial group to watch in Congress right now.
All right, let's turn to another very interesting story on the Bloomberg Terminal this morning. Of course, Facebook is in the midst of advertising boycott with a growing number of businesses pulling their ads on the social network for at least the month of July. That does not, though, extend to the presidential candidates.
It doesn't. And, you know, I think that what we're seeing is pretty high levels of spending. You know, in for the Biden campaign, it's about 75% of their digital spending has been on Facebook thus far. And for the Trump campaign, it's closer to 50%, but still quite significant. And so I think that, you know, that is a reflection both of just the overall impact and reach that Facebook has in terms of the U.S. public right now. It's the world's largest social media platform. And then also importantly, I think it's also a reflection of just kind of the state of this particular campaign in the sense that, you know, most of America is still not out and about in the way that they were 6 months ago. And certainly in-person campaigning and retail campaigning is not happening anywhere close to the level that it normally does. And so I think that, you know, with that more direct route to reaching voters largely cut off for both Trump and Biden right now, it's not surprising that they would, you know, be looking to use Facebook as a tool to reach voters. And I would expect that only to increase, you know, as we get closer to the election.
Although it is interesting because you hear criticism of Facebook and social media generally from both the president and Joe Biden, of course, for differing reasons. And now, as the story points out, we're seeing clear evidence that they're quite literally not putting their money where their mouths are.
Exactly. I think that's the point. And I think that, you know, it just kind of does really bring into stark relief, you know, the distinction between, you know, how politicians, you know, both at the presidential level and also at the congressional level might view social media in terms of how it should be regulated and how they would rather see it run and some of its potential pitfalls, while still at the same time really realizing that it is both a useful tool and a tool that they can't ignore.
Well, thanks, as always, Kate. Bloomberg News politics editor Kathleen Hunter. Again, a very interesting story this morning on the Bloomberg Terminal. You can check that out and also get all the very latest on everything that's happening in Washington at Bloomberg.com. Karen?
Nathan, thank you. It is 6:54 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report, brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, providing industry partners with commercially focused research and innovation services through its New Jersey Innovation Institute. Learn more at njii.com. Now let's see what's happening in science, technology, engineering, and math. Microsoft and its LinkedIn unit will provide free job training to help unemployed workers during the pandemic prepare for in-demand jobs. The program uses LinkedIn data to find the jobs that employers most want to fill and offers free access to content that helps workers develop the required skills. Microsoft aims to provide additional skills to 25 million people globally by the end of the year through the program for such jobs as software developer, customer service specialist, and graphic designer. Google is pushing back a plan to reopen its U.S. offices because of a surge in coronavirus cases in several western and southern states. Now all Google offices in the U.S. will remain closed until September 7th. The company had planned to start bringing back some workers next week. And rental e-scooters will become legal on UK roads after the government published the rules companies must follow to deploy the electric vehicles. The UK has lagged the world in allowing e-scooters to operate legally on its roads, with some restrictive laws dating back to 1835. That's not stopped them becoming a familiar sight in London, raising the pressure on the government to establish a regulatory framework for their safe use. And that's today's Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. It is 6:55 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Small Business Report with John Tucker. John, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Well, we last spoke to Jasmine and Alori at Manhattan Sage Kitchen and Catering in early May. The restaurant was closed because of the pandemic. She was relying on takeout and delivery to generate revenue. Jazzy, as she likes to be called, circling back with us this morning. Where do things stand now with the business?
We happen to be in a more unique situation again because our neighbors on top of us 2 days before the looting and riots started decided to have an accidental fire. So on top of Corona, I have a water damaged restaurant. So it's been definitely an experience for me. So I think we're a little bit of a more unique situation in the restaurant world right now, because we were planning to open and now we can't because we've been part of an accidental fire.
It's just like piling on for you.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was like Friday morning before the riots. I got a phone call and came to see the third floor windows all shattered and the restaurant soaked in some dirty water. And then 2 days later, we had to board up because three out of the seven places on the street got broken into.
Now, with the catering business, is that enough to sustain you?
Long term, no. I mean, fortunately enough, because there was a fire, we're not paying rent while we have to do the construction. So I guess it bought us some time with our landlord. But in the long term, it's not sustainable.
It's quite a story, Jazzy. We hope all the best for you and your business. Jasmine Inalori, she's a partner at Manhattan Sage Kitchen and Catering. And we're going to continue bringing you stories of small businesses trying to adapt and survive in this pandemic every day at this time, right here on Bloomberg Radio. I'm John Tucker. That's your Bloomberg Small Business Report. Karen.
Oh, yeah, we do wish her the best, John. Thank you. Watching Macy's crossing the Bloomberg first quarter loss per share of $11.53. That compares to a profit a year ago, a profit of 44 cents a year ago. Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.